You are listening to They Must Be Destroyed on Sight. The following podcast contains adult language, adult situations, and spoilers for the movies discussed occur often. You've been warned. Now, take it away, Dr. Rausch.
They must be destroyed on sight!
Hello and welcome to They Must Be Destroyed on Sight Intermission Episode 48. I'm your host, Lee Russell, and yeah, I'm not doing a regular episode again this week. Just one of those things, scheduling and give a fuckness and, you know, having the time to, like, prepare and get notes done and all that stuff. Plus, had, like, other podcast plans that kind of fell through this weekend and shit, so, you know, things got jumbled up. It happens. Lady Lee's in the middle of a move, and so, you know, her life's a constant turmoil with school and all kinds of other stuff, so, yeah, you know, every once in a while, it's just, you know, don't have the time to get a guest host or anything like that last minute. Usually I'm just kind of reluctant to, like, ask someone last minute, hey, would you want to come on They Must Be Destroyed on Sight and talk about something right off the cuff without any prep? I don't like not doing prep, so, yeah, anyway, this is probably even going to be a shorter intermission than the last one we did, which was only a couple weeks ago. I'm just going to talk about two movies that I recently screened. Actually, just, what was it? Was it yesterday? No, it was the day before yesterday. It was Saturday night. It was Saturday night. I screened two movies for friends, as I tend to do on either Fridays or Saturdays, depending on what night I have off, and sometimes both nights as well. And usually I try to pick stuff that they haven't seen, and because, you know, they're not as deeply movie nerdy as I am. They're not losers with no lives like I am, who just does nothing but watch movies. So, anyway, that all being said, we're going to talk about two movies on this show after a break. So we're going to hit a podcast promo, a little bit of music, and then we're going to come back and we're going to talk about The Howling and Hello Mary Lou, Prom Night 2. That's right, a horror double feature that I showed to my friends. Be right back.
We got this, man. We got this by the ass.
Broadcasting from the cursed earth, the Psycho Semanticast.
Let us face, without panic, the reality of our time. The fact that atom bombs may someday be dropped on our cities. And let us prepare for survival by understanding the weapon that threatens us.
To have an ignorant, thin-skinned megalomaniac who sends off Twitters at 3 a.m. if somebody angered him.
The neo-Nazis turning up in Washington, D.C. to have a rally saying Heil Trump.
We talk about politics.
I knew I couldn't trust you corporate greaseballs!
We talk about movies.
You can't come down here and arrest people just because of what they look like. Are you crazy? But that's police harassment.
We talk about political movies.
We're in trouble. The whole world's in trouble. They're all around us and we never knew it. You can only see them with these special glasses.
The Psycho Semanticast.
We got this, man. We got this by the ass.
Give me one more kiss. I want the kiss of death. Give me one more kiss. I want the kiss of death. Better feeling lonely. Better feeling blue. Well, I would rather be gone than be without you. Give me one more kiss. I love you better than ice cream. It's a kiss of death. I love you better than existing. It's a kiss of death. Give me one more kiss. I want the kiss of death. Give me one more kiss. more kids. I love you better than pizza. Pizza, pizza, pizza.
Okay, The Howling from 1981. And of course, this is directed by the great Joe Dante. Do I need to list his credits? I don't think I do. Just tons and tons of stuff. And of course, he's got a lot of his usual people working with him here, too. Worked on a ton of stuff with him. It's written by Gary Brandnier, John Sayles, Terrence H. Winkless. I'll be totally honest with you. I had everyone's, like, stuff written down in my notes, and then I somehow fucked my notes up and lost everything. And I'm not going back and rereading all their credits and stuff, so do your own research. Starring Dee Wallace, who is, what, the 80s mother. Like, growing up, she played the just mom in tons of stuff, like Critters, Cujo, Endless, just, Hills Have Eyes. She was America's mother in the 80s, for horror kids anyway, I'd say. E.T., all kinds of stuff. And then we got Patrick McNee as Dr. George Wagner? Yeah, Wagner. Who, of course, John Steed in the Avengers. Among many other things. I know him from, I think the first thing I ever saw him in was The Sea Wolves, which was that late period man on a mission film where it's like all the men on the mission are very old. That was kind of like the gimmick of it. And then we got Dennis Dugan as Chris Halloran. He was Dee Wallace's, no, that's not him. No, Dennis Dugan, I can't remember what he's in. Christopher Stone was the one I was going to say. As Bill Neal, he was the real-life husband of Dee Wallace, died early, like age 55 or something in 1995 of a heart attack. Didn't quite have the career that Dee Wallace had. He definitely did a bunch of stuff, but mostly more like TV movies and stuff like that. Belinda Bulaski as Terry Fisher. She was in Piranha. She was in a couple other things that I'm blanking on right now. Oh, yeah, she was in... She was in both Gremlins films. I'm pretty sure Gremlins 2, and a bunch of other Joe Dante stuff. Kevin McCarthy, the great Kevin McCarthy, Invasion of the Body Snatchers, did a cameo in the Superior remake. He was in Piranha. He was in UHF. He was in the classic Ghoulies 3, Ghoulies Go to College. Just tons of great stuff. John Carradine in this, horror, just film royalty, really. And probably one of his last, like, really great movies, too. Maybe his last great movie. I'm pressed to think what he did after this that was anywhere near as good as The Howling. like, he did a bunch of stuff with Fred Olen Ray, and it's like, I mean, Fred Olen Ray has his charms, but a lot of this stuff was just, like, footage that he shot of John Carradine and then, like, stuck in movies after he died. So, like, I don't know. He did a couple other things that were good. I'm not shitting on him, but this was kind of probably his last big high-profile thing, maybe? I could be corrected on that, but it doesn't come to mind. Great Slim Pickens in this. You know him, you love him. Doctor Strange, love. Pat Garrett, Billy the Kid. Every Western under the sun for the previous, 30, 40 years. And you know him when you see him. Robert Picardo. I'm always surprised that he's in this, but he was in a bunch of Dante's stuff. He was in Inner Space and other things like that. And it's weird seeing him here with, long hair and shit, where, you know, he was obviously a very prematurely balding man. And we all know him from Star Trek Voyager, and some of the real fucking fans know him from Stargate SG-1 and Stargate Atlantis. Thank you very much. Just tons of great stuff. And then, sadly, Elizabeth Brooks also died early, like Christopher Stone did. She died, age 46. I'm fucking 46. That sucks. And she was, she's like Angelina Jolie before Angelina Jolie. She got that same sort of look to her, kind of. But she didn't really do a lot, movie-wise. A lot of bit parts. This was probably her biggest role, honestly. It's the one everyone remembers, anyway. But what can you say about The Howling? I took this last minute and screened it because one of my friends, earlier in the night, is like, I had never seen The Howling. That'd be nice to watch at some point. And I was like, I can get that movie really quickly. So I grabbed it and streamed it as a surprise for him. It had been a while since I'd seen it. And it just takes me back to the sort of startling fact that there's not really a lot of good werewolf movies. And there's werewolf movies made all the fucking time, too. But there's only, maybe 20 that are worth a shit, really. And that's saying something. It sounds like, 20 great werewolf movies out there? That's actually pretty impressive. No, it's really not. When you consider how many there are, and then you consider how many, vampire movies there are, and how many more of those are, really good. The fucking werewolf just kind of gets short shrift all the time, right? And I mean, I feel like a werewolf is kind of, I think part of the reason is that the werewolf myth is kind of very similar to the vampire. So they're very interchangeable. I think Stephen King made this point really well in his book Dance Macabre, where it's like, yeah, you know, werewolf movies, werewolf stories, werewolf movies are basically just vampire stories. It's very much a lot of the same stuff. But I think when you think of The Howling, you think of the only other contemporary of the time would be American Werewolf in London. And both of these films feature great effects. I like The Howling better because it's a little bit more gnarly. It's a little bit more exploitation. It's got Elizabeth Brooks going full frontal, bush and all. It's just got a bunch of great character actors in it, giving really good performances. Everyone in this is strong, I feel like, pretty much. And although it is kind of like a horror mystery, there is no mystery. You know immediately as Dee Wallace goes to this weird therapy retreat, you know that's where the werewolves are, bruh. You know the werewolves are there. You know they're all fucking werewolves. It only makes sense. So there's no mystery, but it's just an excuse to have really great special effects and fun performances and take a few jabs at fucking these new age therapy sessions and stuff like that. Patrick McNee is great as this sort of talk show psychologist or psychotherapist or whatever the fuck he's supposed to be, who in the end we realize is trying to integrate werewolves into human society better so they can survive, which is probably the smart idea. It's probably the best way to do it. But all the other werewolves are secretly can't fight really against their sort of wolf side, and they just want to be wolves, and they just want to fuck and kill, and consequences be damned, and kind of is sets up their undoing, right? But and then there's like there's some stuff about media sensationalism, maybe some serial killer kind of commentary, because Robert Picardo is kind of a serial killer in this, essentially. The werewolf effects are still great to this day. The bladder effect stuff is amazing. They use other techniques here, like there's animation at one point when there's a werewolf sex scene, like it's shot from a distance and it's either like rotoscoping or whatever, but it looks really cool. There's stop motion in the end, just out of nowhere there's like three stop motion werewolves in a shot, which is amazing. Dick Miller is in this, of course, playing Walter Paisley, because of course Dick Miller is in a fucking Joe Dante film playing Walter Paisley, because that's what he does. And he's great. Where is the fucking Dick Miller paranormal investigator fucking series? I want that, man. Because this is one of the few movies where Dick Miller plays a character who's like behind a desk and doesn't die or doesn't get like threatened by somebody. So like in this one, he's like a librarian or whatever, and like an occult bookshop or whatever the fuck it is. And like, I want that character with his no nonsense, like fuck you attitude. And like, what are you stupid? Kind of like attitude. I want to see him do like a cult check kind of thing and like investigate paranormal stuff. Like that would have been great. I would have definitely loved that as a kid, and I would have loved it now. Yeah, not much more else to say about this other than it's a great film. I think it's my favorite werewolf film. Like Dog Soldiers is a close second, and I think that has more to do with the fact that Dog Soldiers is just such a like fast moving, no bullshit kind of movie that like is a successor effects wise kind of to The Howling, in the sense that it kind of rips off the werewolf designs. Because you get those ultra-tall werewolves that look very similar to the Howling werewolves, really, when you look at it. And are very, very cool. But yeah, I love the Howling. Very controversial fucking statement there, right? But I think it's actually way better than American Werewolf in London. I think American Werewolf in London is a little bit more, even though it, you know, it has like modern like gore and effects and stuff like that, it kind of moves back to a more older style film that you would see in the 70s, in a sense. It's a more of a traditional kind of werewolf tale, where this is much more like a modern, like, hey, what can we do with werewolves? And then, of course, as the sequels went on, they were like, hey, what can we do with werewolves? Maybe you shouldn't have asked that question, because a lot of those movies really are terrible. But The Howling is unimpeachable. It's really great. Now we can move on to Hello, Mary Lou, Prom Night 2. And this one, I think I saved all my notes. I did. I didn't fuck up with this one. All right, that's cool. So 1987, directed by Bruce Pittman, and Bruce Pittman and the writer Ron Oliver, I'll just kind of mention them in the same sort of thing here. Long-standing, like, journey, and I don't want to say journey, it sounds like I'm saying this as, like, a damning with faint praise kind of thing, like, journeyman Canadian writers and directors. They both just have long careers in Canadian film and television, and, like, they've done, if you've seen something that was kind of, like, produced in Canada between, like, 1980 to, like, the early 2000s, chances are you've probably seen something they've worked on. Like Bruce Pittman, prolific director, especially for Canadian television. Like he worked on the new Twilight Zone series that came out in the 80s. Friday the 13th, the series, Forever Night, Neon Rider, North of 60, Maniac Mansion, Avon Lee, Deuce Self, William Shatner's fucking Tech War, Earth Final Conflict and Mutant X. So he did a little bit of everything, especially that like 90s Canadian made television, all that Canadian made sci-fi stuff that was just everywhere. It was like on every Saturday, right? And then you look at Ron Oliver, who's the writer of this, who would go on to do the direct sequel to Prom Night 2. He'd do Prom Night 3 as director. He wrote, and of course he'd write Prom Night 3 as well, because that's the only one in the series that's like a real direct sequel to anything in this series, and we'll get more on that in a sec. But he also worked on tons of TV. Are You Afraid of the Dark? The underrated weirdo sci-fi series Lex. He worked on Goosebumps. He worked on The New Addams Family, which had I can't remember her name, but a very sexy Morticia Addams in that TV series in the 90s. It was like 90s, 2000s, something like that. It came out. And the Morticia Addams in that series, my favorite. Oof. I also worked on Psi Factor, Chronicles of the Paranormal, the Canadian X-Files show, which is a weird one. I'm almost tempted to do like to start a new podcast to talk about that show, because I liked it so much, and it just went in such weird fucking places, and it was such a debacle, but kind of a beautiful one. He did like an episode or two of Degrassi and the Next Generation, and now he does like Hallmark movies, which is a great place to make money if you just want to do those cookie cutter fucking Hallmark movies, right? Like, I'm pretty sure, like, you know, your Wynorskis and your Fred Olen Rays and stuff kind of dip into that shit too, or people like them, people sort of in their kind of circles, kind of, hey, I've done all kinds of these titty comedies and gore films, now I'm gonna do some Hallmark movies, do a few for the kids, you know. But our cast here, I'm just going to mention a couple people real quick. And it's mostly, like, I'm pretty sure it's all, or if not all, mostly a Canadian cast, because it was a Canadian production. And, of course, Prom Night 2, this was originally called The Haunting of Hamilton High, and it was changed at sort of, like, last minute and slightly rewritten to be a sequel to the original Prom Night, which I'm not a big fan of. Like, as far as slasher films go, I think it's kind of like a C-tier kind of slasher film. I know Jamie Lee Curtis is in it, so it's part of her Scream Queen years or whatever, but I don't think it's one of her better films. She's just kind of in it. She doesn't really do much in it, honestly. It's not like Terror Train or something like that. This is way more interesting. I just kind of think it's kind of a misfire for the most part. It's got some neat visuals and stuff, and like the novelty of like a disco prom and stuff like that, but other than that, no. Not a big fan. But it was a big hit, so they were like, hey, let's retitle this Prom Night 2, and maybe we'll make more money. But although, you know, this is like 7 years fucking later, so I don't know what they were thinking, really. Like, they thought that Prom Night was still in the public consciousness that much, that they were going to see Prom Night 2 in, like, droves. But, you know, we got Michael Ironside in this. Canadian legend, for my money, he's in the conversation of greatest Canadian actors ever. Top five for sure. We got Wendy Lyon, who had a nice little career, sort of, you know, in and out. She sort of got her start on Anne of Green Gables, which, man, there's been a lot of Anne of Green Gables and Green Gables related television over the years. But I think she was in, like, kind of the first one, if I'm not mistaken. She popped up recently in Guillermo del Toro's Shape of Water. So she's been, like, kind of working actress here and there. Just pops up and does some stuff here and there kind of thing. Got Justin Lewis, who's one of those Canadian that guy actors. You've seen him in tons of stuff, if you don't even know his name. He was in a bunch of the later Saw movies as a detective. I've never seen them because I don't like that series, but he was in Stargate Universe, and he showed up in the remake of Dawn of the Dead. He was, I'm blanking on her fucking name now. Canadian actress. Sarah Pauley. He was her husband in that, in the opening there. He was in Shooter, which is a fun film. And then we got Lisa Schrage, who plays Mary Lou in this, and I don't know why she didn't have a bigger career. She was in Food of the Gods 2. I remember her from that. And that she just kind of did like one or two other things, and that was about it, which is a shame because she's really good in this. But like the movie, I love this a lot. It'd been a while since I've seen it, but this is one I used to rent all the time in the 90s on VHS. Because I always felt it was the better Nightmare on Elm Street. And like this movie shamelessly rips off Nightmare on Elm Street stuff to the point where they had like someone who worked on some of the effects in Nightmare on Elm Street on this film. And the effects in this film are great. Like there's the chalkboard portal effect at one point where Wendy Lion gets sucked into that. It's amazing. I think it cost like half their fucking budget to do it. But it was amazing. But yeah, it rips off Nightmare on Elm Street Part 2. It rips off Carrie incredibly. fucking Stephen King and Brian De Palma might have grounds to sue. Just putting it out there. And it's great. Like, Wendy Lion plays this sort of like churchy girl to perfection, I feel. Like, she's not quite like so sheltered that she's like socially stunted as a girl from a church going family, but you know, she's henpecked. She's not quite Carrie White levels of like full of anxiety and shit, but you know, she's kind of cool. She's got a boyfriend. She's, you know, she's not a loser, quote unquote. But she does sort of, she pulls off that, like, I went to school with people who are like, you know, Jehovah's Witnesses, or, you know, they came from families that were Jehovah's Witnesses or Mormons or just like really strict, some sort of strict Christian denomination. Right. And, you know, sometimes some of them were like really nice, but you could tell they were kind of sheltered. They're kind of plain looking. They weren't allowed to like dress like other kids. And she's kind of like that in this, but she pulls it off really well. It's funny because this movie immediately you can tell, it was shot in Canada. I think it was shot in, Saskatchewan, if I'm not mistaken. I think it was one of the prairie provinces it was shot in. But like it's one of those ones like, hey, yes, this is small town America. No, it ain't. It is very Canadian. But it works. Like it brings all the kind of sleaziness that was missing from the Nightmare on Elm Street movies, I think, is the big thing. Like it's got a little bit of TNA. It's a little bit more risque in some ways. I find the villain much more interesting. I think Mary Lou Maloney is a cool victim, villain. Well, she is a victim too, because she, even though she's not a great person when she was alive, she is like unfairly, like, you know, like a horrible accident that she didn't deserve, kills her. But I like it. I think the special effects are really good. The performances are decent. It uses that dream logic, that dreamy imagery that Nightmare on Elm Street does so well. But I think works way better for me, for my money, in this. I like that, you know, Wendy Lion is kind of fighting, like, being possessed, essentially. And so, like, this is much more closer to Friday the 13th Part 2 than is the original Friday the 13th, Nightmare on Elm Street. Because it kind of, you know, it directly has that, like, I'm trying to possess somebody so I can come into the real world again. And that's what Mary Lou's doing in this. And I like the deaths. I like Michael Ironside, the guy they got to like match him as his younger version in the movie. And then we see the, you know, the present day Michael Ironside as a grown adult. Really well done. And the just that sort of harking back to like 1950-ish kind of stuff. And it's kind of haunting. It's a ghost story and a revenge from the grave story and a gory fucking almost slasher film. All of it works on me, man. I think it's really well done. I think it's one that people unfairly maligned back in the day because they were, oh, it's so derivative of these other films. No, it's not only derivative, but, well, I mean, it's better. I enjoy this much more than the Nightmare on Elm Street films. Is it better than Carrie? No, but it does the Carrie thing really well. So it's like, I have no complaints. And, yeah. I think I run out of stuff to say about it, other than I really like it. I enjoyed rewatching it. I found a copy that someone, like a fan, did an HD restoration of, so it wasn't like an official copy from like a some DVD company or whatever, right? And it fucking looked great. The effects had no seams. It was like, it was amazing. And highly recommended. Both these films, highly recommended. And you know, with Prom Night 2, that might be more of a surprise to people. Like, you know, Howling is a fucking duh. But Prom Night 2, some people might sleep on this one. But I think it's really good. And, you know, I have no problem, again, with it being like, having no real relation to the original film. You know, they changed the name of the high school to Hamilton High, so it's like, oh, it's the same high school, but it really fucking is not. But they do a better job of, like, branching this to the other sequels, at the very least. So, like, Prom Night 3 is a direct sequel to this in a sense that it's carrying over Mary Lou Maloney, but it becomes a parody of these films. And it's essentially a parody of this film in a lot of ways, because it's a horror comedy, but it's still like kind of sleazy and sexy and stuff at the same time too, so it kind of keeps that kind of feeling intact. And then part three, I know it uses some footage from part two, and it references like some stuff where it's like the opening takes place on the same night that Mary Lou Maloney gets burned in 1957 or whatever in part two. So it's like, oh yes, there's this other story going on in the background that same night with this killer priest. And then we come 40 years later, 35 or so years later or whatever to, fucking now. And the priest is, back and murdering people again, kind of thing. I think that one is not half bad either, honestly. For a series where it's a bunch of films that had no business being connected to the original film, I think it actually holds up pretty well. They're fun films. So, I'm going to take off now. I'm not sure when we're doing a real episode again. Hopefully next weekend. Hopefully we can get something together next week. And I have some vague plans for stuff to do. So we'll see what happens. We'll see what Lady Lee's up to. See if I can get someone else to guest host with me if she can't show up. But until then, we're going to take off. You'll be hearing this. Well, this will be posted Monday night. In fact, I'll be posting it right after I finish recording it. And Tuesday, you should get the next Blood in the Tracks, but that might be a day late. It just depends on how much time I have to edit it and put it together. I'm running a little late on stuff this month. But thanks for listening, guys. Always appreciate the scant few who come every week and listen to my stupid little show, our stupid little show. But cheers. We'll catch you next time. Bye-bye.
You're alone. I saw little remind, and when the sun goes down, your memory's back around with you, and your heart is breaking down. Thank you.
soul apart and made you run away till now. And your mind won't forget.
This is why.
Been listening to They Must Be Destroyed on Sight. For further episodes of this podcast, please go to tmbdos.podbean.com. Thank you. Drive through.